Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, May 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Time to scour your basements, your attics, your closets for hidden treasures, because today we discuss antiques. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques is in the studio to answer your questions. So whether you're a collector, maybe you just want to know more about a piece that you have, how to refurbish an antique piece, give us a call. Number's 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson and your antique questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing antiques on the program today, and Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques is here. Mark has been buying, selling, collecting interesting things since he was about 8 years old. After running a traditional antique shop and opening a gallery on Broadway in Saratoga, Mark was approached by Sotheby's in 2000 to assist in organizing and curating single-owner sales. Mark is a past member of the American Society of Appraisers and has completed courses in the NYU Appraisal Studies Program in Period American Furniture at the Metropolitan Museum. He is also certified in diamond grading from the Gemological Institute of America, an RPI grad with a degree in materials engineering. Mark travels throughout the region, meeting with clients, helping them settle estates and family treasures. Mark Lawson, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be here, Ray.
Our number, if you have a question about an antique item of any kind, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or if you want, you can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. So, Mark Lawson, what's new?
Not much, Gray. The winter that wouldn't die has finally ended, I think. Some beautiful days outside. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Well, I hope so. Anything antique-wise that you have been following?
Not so much. I think you mentioned before we started the Beatles album that sold for about
$234,000.
$234,000. That's pretty good.
That was that album, the American release of Yesterday and Today.
Yep.
Which was an American compilation, not the same as their English releases. And when they first put it out, they got the great idea of posing in butcher's outfits with dolls of baby parts.
Yes.
And Capitol Records quickly said, oh, no. And they covered them up with a more benign cover.
Yes.
Well, John Lennon had a copy of this in his own collection, and it was signed by Lennon, and he drew a little picture on the back, and McCartney and I think Ringo signed it. Anyway, it went for $234,000. I think that's a bargain. I think somebody will get, apparently an unidentified collector bought it as an investment, and I bet you go $100,000 more in a few years on that one.
You never know. That's certainly the Beatles are an iconic musical group, and the incredible history in American society and culture. So, was anytime a piece has that kind of history with one of the members of the band or something,
yeah,
it always commands a serious premium.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have an antique question, and the lines are beginning to load up here, Mark Lawson. So let's go to the phones, and we go to Bob in Ulster. Bob.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, Bob.
Taking the call. I have an old Louis Vuitton steamer trunk that I'm finally in a position where I should let it go. Where should I take that? How do you get the best value out of something like that?
Okay.
Yeah, Louis Vuitton, as many of the listeners probably know, a very high-end luxury goods maker. They do beautiful leather luggage, handbags, purses, all types of leather accessories. I'm sure they've been in business at least since the 19th century. Vintage Louis Vuitton trunks are very desirable and very much sought after. Typically, with something like that, you're going to do best with an auction venue. Selling at auction can be the best way to go. Auctions have a for sellers and for auctioneers have the great advantage in exploiting human psychology. The phenomenon is known as auction fever, and very often, you know, you can go to an auction looking at something that you're interested in buying and have a price set in your head. Okay, I'm going to bid $100 on that. And once you start bidding and you're bidding against somebody else that wants that thing that you want,
yeah,
almost always people will pay much, much more than they planned on paying to begin
it's
with.
It's the whole thing that eBay is based upon.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Competition.
So it's something like this that where it's a luxury good. When it was made, it was very expensive. Not that many people could buy them, there weren't certainly as many Louis Vuitton trunks made as, you know, American Tourist or something. They're relatively uncommon. And when they come onto the marketplace, they're sought after, and they're sought after competitively. So as a seller, you want to exploit that. What area of the country are you in?
Ulster County.
Ulster County. So I'm trying to think of I don't know how far you are from Freehold and Catskill. There's a good auctioneer that sells high-end American arts and accessories, but certainly would be a place that would be good for a trunk, Carlson Gallery in Freehold.
Carlson.
The main thing, I just want to say one thing, Ray. The main thing when you're looking to sell at an auction in this day and age, what you want to make sure that they have is live internet bidding when they have the live auction.
Ah.
So they reach everybody on the internet around the world. Carlson Gallery is one of the closest places that offers that.
Cool.
So that's the, I think, in my opinion, That would be an excellent way to sell your trunk.
Okay, hey, and Bob, one little tip from me. Yep, in Catskill, right?
Yeah.
Bob, just a little tip. There's something wrong with your phone. We have a 60-cycle hum on there. You might want to have that one looked at or replaced. But anyway, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. You see, it's early in the program. The veins in Zach the Engineer's head are already popping out of his... Sorry about that one, Zach. We do the best we can. Kerry in Plainfield, Mass., you're on.
Oh, how you doing today?
Good.
Good, thanks. How are you?
What I'm calling about is my mom has every complete newspaper from the year of 1872, Harper's Weekly. And I was just wondering if there's any value to that.
There's going to be a little bit with the old Harper's Weeklies. Well, let me just preface this that in the 1880s and the 1890s, the way paper was made was changed, and the formulations included a lot of acidic chemicals, and the paper wound up with a high acid residue within it, which caused the paper to deteriorate and oxidize relatively quickly. Prior to the 1880s, 1890s, paper was not made this way, and that paper lasts forever. So very often I have people come to me with old newspapers, and unfortunately, they're quite common, and there's lots of them, and many of them survived as long as they were kept, you know, relatively dry, and that's about relatively dry. So with these, the old Harper's Weeklies, they're beautiful. They have some nice, they can have nice illustrations in them. Winslow Homer did lots of illustrations for Harper's Weeklies. It really, the value is going to depend on the content, the illustrations and content. In the 1870s, I'm not sure what there's going to be. I know Saratoga was a popular subject. Seeing, you know, nice full page or half page scenes of Saratoga can command a little bit of extra money, political content. You know, most of the common ones, if you're lucky, might be worth $5 or $10. If they have some unusual content in them, they might be worth, you know, $20 or $30 or $40. Hmm. Really, you have to go back to the Harper's Weeklies of the Civil War to have more value than the ones that were made after 1865.
Is there a good reference that Kerry might be able to look at?
Not that I'm aware of for Harper's Weeklies, unfortunately. I mean, of course, Google's your friend. You can always go online and search, like search Harper's Weekly with the date, and that's going to pull up any. But you can also just page through, and the if you don't recognize anything in that, if there's nothing special to you inside that newspaper, there's not going to be anything special probably to most anybody else. So less likely that there will be a significant premium in value.
All right, Kerry, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest. We talk antiques today. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Antiques Today. Mark Lawson of Albany's Mark Lawson Antiques with us. And we'll jump right back to the phones at 800-348-2551. As soon as we handle this email, this one came in from Josh, and the subject heading, Clocksmith. Josh writes, I have a Seth Thomas clock. Internet research places it 1850 to 1870. Needs some work, though. Two questions. Is there a standard way to identify clocks or the clock works? This one is stamped S. Thomas, capital A. Second, do you know of a good clocksmith in the Hudson Valley? They seem hard to find.
Yeah, that's there is an online resource that's pretty good called, I think, like, onlineclockvalues.com or something like that.
Or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's if you just if you Google clock values, vintage clock values, it'll immediately pop up. That's the best resource that I found online, and it's got a lot of information not only about value, but if you search Seth Thomas, a gazillion Seth Thomas examples will come up, many of them with detailed descriptions, and you'll be able to probably find out more about it than any other way. The finding a good clock repairman is very difficult. What happened is, you know, 25 years ago, collecting clocks was a very popular hobby in the United States.
The people
that collected them were people collect things out of a sense of nostalgia, sentiment that, you know, they remember things from when they were a kid. And clocks really started, the old wind-up clocks really started going out around World War I in the 1920s when the wristwatch started coming in. And really, over the last 10 to 15 years, I've seen a catastrophic drop in interest in old clocks and also with the prices. I think, unfortunately, the population that cared about them passed away. So less people interested in clocks. Certainly, there are less people interested in getting their clocks fixed or repaired.
Yeah.
Most of the clock repairmen and makers also went out of business. I would say there's a place that you could call the most reliable watch place for repairing watches in the area is Howie's over in Lansingburg. Nice people. I'm sure if you called them, he would be the best person to ask for a referral to a reliable clockmaker.
That's a good spot to start. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bill in Western Massachusetts. Bill, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wonder if Mark has heard of these items that I inherited through my grandpa. They're called Paoletti Impronti. Paoletti is the name of an Italian family that made these. They're full books. They're hardcover books. And when you open the cover, there are like cameos. I believe they're plaster cameos, incredibly detailed. I mean, if you look at these things with a magnifying glass, the detail is just phenomenal on them. Have you heard of these? The only place I've ever seen something exactly like this is in a museum in Florence. And so I have no idea of whether they have any value or not. So that's my question.
Okay.
Have you heard of these? And
yes, and I've seen them repeatedly over the years. These were, I think they, the family that made these, created these, Paoletti's. They originated in Rome in the early 19th century. And these were traditional, common grand tour souvenirs. So a affluent family or a person would go on a grand tour of mostly the Holy Lands back in the 19th century, picking up souvenirs on the way. They'd go to Jerusalem. They'd go to Rome. They'd stop by all the, you know, they'd go to Constantinople. They'd stop by all the great, you know, ancient religious places, the ancient Christian religious places. So this would have been something that they picked up during those times. They are, let's see if I can find some.
You're cheating, aren't you? You're using a device.
Well, I just wanted to check on the prices because I don't see them that often. The last time I did an estate 3 or 4 years ago that had a nice bound set, and I think we got it was in nice condition. It was beautiful. They're wonderful examples, but they're wonderful examples of, you know, classical art. But they were relatively mass-produced and relatively inexpensive.
Yeah.
They're cast plaster, basically. So they're not too durable. So they're interesting, and I think when I had one book, maybe I got $200 or $300 for
okay.
it, something like that. I think that is probably a reasonable estimate of. But I'd want to do a little bit more research just to see what the current values are. But
all right.
So they're worth a little bit, but not a fortune. But they're absolutely beautiful.
All right, Bill, thank you for the call. It's Antiques Today on Vox Pop. Mark Lawson is here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jesse in Kingston is on. Jesse.
How are you? I have a beautiful wall covering, like a rug, and I had seen it on Antiques Roadshow, and it was my mother's, and we actually had the same one or close looking to like it, and it was noted to us that it was like, you know, how the wheat or how much water or how well they did during the years, and I don't know if it was like Native American or Mayan or whatnot, but not really sure, but I know it was very close to the one I saw on the Antique Roadshow.
So you think?
I was just wondering, like, how? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, so you think it's American Indian or Central or South American, possibly?
Yeah, it's like a wall covering rug, and it has like a mountain, and it's like knotted wool, and it
sure.
has like tassels hanging down.
Sounds beautiful.
And it's very pretty. Yeah.
Sounds beautiful. I love textiles. I also, you know, studied Persian and Oriental rugs and weavings at the appraisal studies program. The thing with this type of thing and any kind of weaving that's sought after and desirable, they're very easy to copy.
Mm.
And anything really good has
pretty
been
old,
copied
like,
extensively, and they
yeah.
you know, they have been copying them extensively for 100 years. So
right.
you can see
yeah,
things
I'm
that
sure.
have some good age that are later copies. So it's really hard without having an expert take a firsthand look at it to know for sure.
Yeah.
Very often you can,
I know my mom's had it for at least before I was born. It's been in our family for at least 50 years, I was told.
Sure. The best thing to do is to send high-quality images. We can always take a look for
mm-hmm.
you and give you a free opinion.
Oh,
and,
what's your email address?
It's marklawsonantiques@gmail.com. Happy to take
mm-hmm.
a look, and if it's give you some information and steer you in the direction
yeah.
of a specialist if you need it.
All right, Jesse.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Mark Lawson is our guest. It's 800-348-2551. Patrick in Columbia County is on. Patrick.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
I have a general question that may lead to another question, if I may. I noticed that I don't see a whole lot of mirrors on the show, like Antiques Roadshow and others, when they're doing appraisals. Is there a reason for that?
It's funny. The first thing that occurs to me is that the most desirable antique mirrors from maybe the 18th century and earlier are worth the most when they have the original glass in them that has never been touched or restored. And typically, They're terribly corroded and deteriorated and almost useless as a mirror to actually use to look in. But they have a wonderful patina and an antique look that the antiquarians are always happy to find and really appreciate. My first guess is that that doesn't really present too well on television. So the other thing is the in trying to photograph mirrors and for sale and for cataloging, it's really, really hard to manage the reflections
with the lights.
So that's another thing that just practically might make it really difficult for them to try and bring a big mirror out on the set with all these lights and all these cameras and all these people.
But they still are collectible, even if they're not on the TV show.
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so if I may, I have a mirror that was given to me from a woman who grew up in England. I've had it a very long time. Do you know of a good resource that I'd be able to find out what it's worth?
She grew up where?
In England.
In England.
In England, yeah.
The
beveled glass in it and a very nice frame, and that's all I know.
If you could, again, send an image, I'd be glad to take a look. You can also try, do you feel that it has age greater than, 100 years or maybe truly antique?
Yeah, I mean, she when I worked for her, she was into her 80s, and I haven't worked for her in probably 15 years now, so I'm guessing... that it's got some age to it.
And what area are you located in?
I'm in Columbia County.
Yeah, so you can always search out if you're unable to email to someone like me an image, you can always draw on local people, local antique shops. People ask me all the time, well, how do I know if somebody is a good person to deal with?
And that's a great question.
I think if you call somebody up and they're pleasant on the phone and you meet with them, you talk with them, and most people, in my experience, within 10 or 20 seconds of talking to somebody, you'll know whether you'll have an idea whether you feel comfortable doing business with them. So if you talk to them, they seem nice and they make you feel like, hey, this person might be okay to deal with. Ask them and find out, and that's going to be the best way to get some information easy, close to you.
Devil's advocate here. I've bought a couple of cars over the decades from people who seem fairly nice.
Oh, boy.
Let's go to Linda in North Adams. Linda, you're on.
Hi. I have a Abraham Lincoln. It's encased in a 3x4 foot walnut frame that deserves a library. It is a steel engraving of Abe, and the author or the artist is John Marshall, who did the $5 bill.
Oh.
I've done that much research on it, and the only issue that we have with Abe is that it's been hanging in my dining room under really bad environment, I guess I'm told, and that's why he's got some freckles on him. But I guess I'm just wondering if you have any feel at all for its value.
Yeah.
So, and you said it's 3 or 4 feet wide or tall?
Yeah, the frame is, and the steel engraving itself.
So do you feel does it appear that the frame is original, an old 19th century walnut frame?
The frame is absolutely beautiful and definitely original.
Well, Lincoln's an iconic president. Collectibles related to Lincoln are very highly sought after. A nice steel engraving with from the period with Lincoln, could certainly be worth at least $500 to $1,000, sometimes more. What you'll have to keep in mind is any damage that you mentioned, spotting, any foxing, that's a mildew dots or toning or any kind of staining, will reduce that value, proportional to how much it might cost to restore.
But you don't want to clean that off, though, right?
Not yourself.
Linda
absolutely
does not,
not
want
no,
to touch that,
no,
right?
You want to. You want to make sure that a professional does the work.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's good advice. Thank you so much.
Linda, thanks a lot for the call.
Hey, Ray. Yo. You don't think that the people buying from the used car salesman, I think those guys are good at making the sale even though you feel uncomfortable about it. So you know
I'm not denying that. That's another program entirely. I'm not denying what you just said is true. And let's just leave it alone.
Okay.
800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Mark Lawson is our guest. Christine in Monterey. Christine, you're on.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Christine.
Thank you for taking my call. Hi. I've got a compilation of 20th, early 20th, and some 19th century political cartoons. They're not signed. I have 2 books worth of them. I used to have a little antique shop. I just like them. I didn't believe they had any value, but they call from the era of Tammany Hall and earlier. They're not signed. Somebody put them together in a wallpaper book from North Adams. And so they're in great shape. I guess that was acid-free paper, and maybe that's why they did it. I don't know. But I'm just wondering if they have any value. I know they're ephemera and all that.
So is this like a scrapbook where somebody took cartoons from the newspaper and mounted them?
Yes, political cartoons mounted.
So it really depends on the subject. You know, there's a lot of subjects from that time, like the latest congressional dispute over the agricultural bill of 1898 that probably not too many people care about. But anything related to presidential elections, anything related to historical events that still live in the American consciousness are certainly going to have some value. There are specialists in political memorabilia. There's one person in Albany that's pretty good, Dennis Holtzman at Dennis Holtzman Antiques. But you can also just search on Google. Typically, the scrapbooks don't, even if it has great content, they're not going to have a lot of value. But, you know, it has potential to certainly be worth a little bit if there's some interesting content in there. And also if it presents well, if it looks beautiful and is a nice decorative thing as well, that can help it.
No, that's not the case in this case. But the cartoons themselves
are well preserved.
They're in great shape. And just to before I get off, I can let you know that there is a wonderful clock repair shop in Pittsfield, Mass.
Oh, great!
You want the name of it?
Well, you can go ahead.
West Side Clock.
What's the name of it?
West Side
Clock. West Side Clock. Okay,
West Side
Christine,
Clock, okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. Over to Mike in South Hadley. Mike, you're on.
Hi, Ray. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Love your shows.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a music question. I have a couple of albums from the 70s. One of them is a Rare Earth Live album. It came in a backpack.
Cool.
The album cover was in a backpack, and I've heard all kinds of crazy stuff on the internet trying to Google it, and I can't figure out the price of it. The album is in perfect condition.
Well, you can search on eBay completed auctions and see, you know, if any examples have sold there. The best resource that I know of for vintage albums is a website. It used to be a magazine called Gold Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Now it's a website, and it's a great place to get information and to find specialists that may be able to help you out with identification and pricing of those type of albums.
Okay. My second album is Lynyrd Skynyrd. Just before they died in the plane crash, they came out with an album with the band In Flames.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And after they passed away, they changed the album cover.
Yeah, sure.
I have the original.
Well, they made a lot of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I remember that. And it's certainly going to be worth more than the later changed versions. But again, that's not an area of specialty of mine, and Gold Mine's a great resource online.
Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. We got to take a break here. The number is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is here. Antiques on the home stretch coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is our guest today. It's Antiques on the program, and then we'll get right back to the phones. I promise there are three emails here that I can count here. Yeah, three. Four? No, three. This one's from Tracy. Tracy writes, a family member has a piece of cloth purportedly from Abe Lincoln's coffin. It was given to her by her uncle, who received it from J.D. Saltzman. How would I begin to authenticate this? Yikes.
Yeah, that's a great question. Typically, you need documentation. You need documentation or a documentable family history that will give some credence to that. A lot of many times people bring things like that to me, and you know, the first thing I ask them about is the history. How did you get it? How did you come by it? If you can say, if there's a clear family history, if there's a clear history of possession from the time, and you can document it to some degree, that's a start.
Right.
It's best if you have it all, you know, laid out every step of the way. If you don't have anything or there's gaps in that, it's going to be really tough. But, you know, I can't imagine that there's a whole lot of people running around, you know, faking, a swatch of cloth. Who knows?
You're not going to dig up Lincoln and look for the cloth, right? So,
but that sort of thing is collectible, is sought after. It's going to have some value if you can make a persuasive, with some documentation, argument that shows to some reasonable degree that it could be what you're saying it is.
That's pretty cool. This one is from Michael. Michael writes, my family has a Boston Herald front page and several more pages from 1898 on the day when news broke out on the sinking of the Maine in Cuba. We put it under glass about 40 years ago, but didn't know of UV protection, so it browned. Any value?
Yeah, it's hard. You can get it lightened again. Unfortunately, the paper from that period is the paper with acid content,
yeah.
So you can't. Unfortunately, it's certainly become embrittled by this point, and it may be so brittle that it's impossible to restore. It really depends how far it's gone.
Okay,
I just sold a group of Spanish-American War related newspapers, and I think for a group of 10 of them, maybe, you know, I got $50, something like that. So they're interesting, but at that point, newspapers were relatively mass produced. So and there are fewer people that care about the Spanish-American War today.
Right.
So a little bit of value, but not worth an awful lot.
All right. This one is from Mike in Saratoga, and then we'll jump back on the phones. Mike writes, three items here. Hardcover first edition, fifth printing signed edition of Slaughterhouse-5 signed by Kurt Vonnegut. So it's a first edition, fifth printing, signed edition, Slaughterhouse-5, Kurt Vonnegut.
Okay, any famous book signed by the author is going to have some value. The anything other than the first printing, first edition, is not going to have significant value because of its being a first edition.
Okay.
So once it's you're into the later printings, may be worth a little bit more than, you know, a printing 10 or 20 years later, but much less than the first edition, first printing.
All right. Go ahead.
Off the top of my head, I don't know a value that's easy enough to look. There's one of the biggest online clearinghouses for used and rare books is called Abe Books,
yep. Mm-hmm.
abebooks.com. And I'm sure you can look that up online and see how much
or little
are selling for right now.
All right, the second item, they get more interesting as they go along. A Christmas card to our family from Kurt. He was a distant cousin.
That's going to be, you know, that's the sort of thing, you know, things age as people, as celebrities move out of the public consciousness, their import and their significance to people and thus their value tends to decrease. So I don't know if I had to guess, you know, it might be worth $20 or $30
we'll as an
interesting thing. But I don't think it's going to have significant value unless he wrote some note about, you know, when I was writing that book, Slaughterhouse-Five, you know, it occurred to me that I shouldn't name it this. Unless it has some important content related to what he was famous for. It's probably going to have a relatively modest value.
All right, this is an interesting one. And the last item that Mike talks about, a limited edition lithograph that Vonnegut did, framed about 2 by 3 feet. It's in blue ink and has a weird saying on it. I'd rather not have Ray read it on the air. He gave it to my wife when she visited him in New York City a few years before he passed. So it's a limited edition lithograph with a weird saying from Kurt Vonnegut.
I've seen these before, and I've had to value them before, and I'm pretty sure that somebody brought me one after he had died, thinking that since he died, it's going to be worth more now. But I'm pretty sure that since the height of his popularity, things like this have relatively decreased in value. I would be surprised if it was worth more than $100, and it might be worth less.
All right, let's go to Eileen in Chesterfield, Massachusetts. Eileen.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Eileen.
I'm my mother-in-law, her mother, my husband's grandmother, was an heiress who lived on Lakeshore Drive in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and owned one of the original mansions there.
Great.
And we have a whole set of her gold leafed furniture, not a whole set, but quite a bit of it. And the question is, this is not Louis XIV, although it looks like Louis XIV being a little on the cheap side when she was in Europe waiting for a house to be built. Somebody took her aside and said, I can get that made for you a lot cheaper. So the furniture was basically made for her in Europe, but it's really a knockoff of, say, Louis XIV type furniture.
Interesting.
Does that have any value? It'd probably be late 18th century. That she was there purchasing this.
Late 1800s, maybe.
Late 1800s, sorry.
So the furniture market has changed an awful lot in the last 10 to 15, well, ever since 2008, really, with the collapse of the housing market. That started a big change in the furniture market. People today, they don't entertain or keep house the same way, so they don't build formal dining rooms. So much has changed. That being said, high-style, Gilded Age furniture that's actually gilded and beautiful is still going to command some value in the marketplace. Hard to say how much, but I wouldn't sell it at a estate sale or, you know, to Aunt Betsy before you did a little bit of research. There is a good chance that it might still have some good value because of anything from that period, you know, the 1890s, the turn of the century, the big mansions, all of that. There still is a marketplace, although not big, but a strong marketplace for exceptional decorative objects from that period, including furniture.
And I suppose it might depend also on who actually made this in Europe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's stupid. That would be difficult to find out, but maybe not impossible.
All right.
So
sometimes they're signed, and an expert might be able to look, you know, inside the upholstery. Very often, you know, inside the upholstery on a stretcher, on an interior surface, there might be a label or some markings. Yeah. So, or it might be able to be recognized simply by the craftsmanship and how it was made.
All right, Eileen, thanks a lot for the call. We jump over to Mark in Rock Hill. Mark, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. I want to jump on the musical stage as well, and I was wondering about the value of a collection of Beatle bootleg albums, including pictured discs where the album cover is actually embedded in the vinyl and it's playable.
Cool. That sounds like an awesome collection. And
thanks.
Yeah, that's great. Beatles stuff is... I don't really think the prices have wavered. If anything, they've continued to increase over the years. But you have a group of relatively rare specialty items. I would again refer you to the online resource of Goldmine.
I'm not sure Goldmine will touch the bootlegs. I'm not sure about that.
Well, the
you'll see them on eBay all the time.
Well, the dealers that are part of the gold mine community,
they
will
might.
Certainly will.
They might be on there.
And it still is a place to go and get information. You can also look at for some of the things. There is a eBay bought the company. There's a company called Terra Peak, TERAPEAK, which is a company that's owned by eBay that indexes, and it's for a monthly fee, or I think a one-time fee. You can go in and have access to the past year of completed eBay sales.
Ah.
So you can look up and see what some things have actually sold for or not sold for. So, and in this case, that's where a lot of records and a lot of Beatles material, that's probably the most active marketplace is eBay. So that might be
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Mark Lawson is here. We talk antiques. Andrea in Middlefield, Mass. Andrea, you're on.
Thank you. I have, through my life, accumulated a lot of artwork, original paintings, some oils, some watercolors, and they're beautiful. But as I age, I want to make sure that I insure them properly, and I don't have values on them from appraisals. And I'm wondering a few things. A, how much does it cost to get a piece of artwork, you know, like a painting appraised? I was also wondering, like, a time frame that usually people will keep your art for while they appraise it. And how do you find, like, there's a particular artist named Carl Strasberg that did several of the pieces I have that I love. He's a great artist. And I can't find any information on him. Do you guys have a secret, like, way to find out that stuff? Because I thought, geez, I'll Google him and I'll look at, you know, particular sites, but I've had no luck.
Well, there's professional databases that we subscribe to, that all the major and minor auction houses subscribe to, that compile sales data on artists' work, but they're all pretty much indexed to Google. And if an artist shows up in those databases, they're certainly going to show up when you Google them, if only for a chance for the database to give you the opportunity to pay them some money to have access to their database. So if you're not finding anything on Google, then, you know, a lot of times very talented artists, they may die young, they may not be terribly prolific, they may paint for a couple of years and say, oh, the heck with this, I'm going to go, you know, get a job at the wherever, at the bank.
Yeah, he did a lot of painting in Paris and in Germany. And it seems like from the late 1880s, early 90s, until maybe 1920 or something. I have several.
So you do have some information on him.
Okay.
I can see from when he signed it.
Right, right. So, well, you raise several different questions that we could spend a lot of time talking about. A professional appraiser typically works on an hourly basis. They're going to charge you anywhere from $100 to $200 an hour for their time to do the work that results in usually a certified written appraisal for you. And the cost is simply a reflection of how much time it takes them. Usually, appraisals can be done if an appraiser comes and examines the pieces firsthand, maybe takes some pictures for the report and for reference, but they shouldn't have to take possession of them unless that's the most convenient way for you to have them see the works, and you don't want to wait while they take notes or whatever. So there's three appraisal societies: the American Society of Appraisers, the American Appraisers Association, and the
Appraisal Association of America.
No. Did I say that? There's the ASA, the AAA, and the, oh, goodness, I can't.
Now, the AAA, that's about driving, right?
No.
That's a different thing.
Different AAA.
All right.
So look on, if you just Google appraisal associations, any of the appraisal associations that come up will have a tool on their website where you can find an appraiser in a specific specialty near you. And that's a great place to start.
Let's go to Russell in New Paltz. Russell.
Hello, I am on speakerphone. Do you want me off it?
Well, if possible, that would be good.
Okay.
Oh. Here we go then. I have a collection of 13 Kobe mugs. I know they're not worth much.
Yes.
Nobody seems to want to even take them on consignment.
Yes.
How would you get rid of these things? I think they're grotesque.
What's a Toby mug?
It's
those Royal Dalton things.
They're figural mugs that were originally.
You go ahead, Mark.
The Mad Hatter.
I see.
They were originally they were figural English Staffordshire mugs and pitchers in the figural. In the figure of Toby, who was an English character of some sort.
Toby.
Most of the it's something that was popular, 75-100 years ago.
So how would you get rid of them?
Estate sale or donation.
Okay.
They have little value.
All right. Well, Russell, thank you for the call. Quickly, let's jump over to line 6. Phyllis in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Phyllis.
Hi, Phil.
Are you there?
Yes.
Hello. You're on.
How can we help?
I was calling because I have some of the blue and white, I think it's ceramic, and I was wondering, how do I find out if they're worth anything?
Well, do they have any markings on the back? That's the first place to start.
On the bottom, yes. Mm-hmm.
And what do they say?
I can't read it. it's a one piece has like a line. It looks like a backwards J and then a dot.
Backwards J and a dot.
Okay.
All right.
That could be a lot of different things. If you have a
Somebody
computer. Go ahead.
I do. Somebody told me it's the artist's signature.
And sometimes that's exactly what it could be, depending on what sort of things that you have. The best way is to have somebody knowledgeable take a look at the pieces with the marks.
Yeah.
We're happy to do that. You could contact a local dealer or specialist near you. You can also Google just blue and white porcelain ceramics marks
and look through the 8,000 pictures that you come up with.
Well, yeah, but that's a resource I use every day, and it works.
Persistence pays off. Phyllis, we're about out of time here. And if somebody did want to email you just for quick advice on something, what is the email address again?
It's marklawsonantiques, all one word, all lowercase, @gmail.com.
And you got a website, right?
Yeah, marklawson.com.
All right, sir. Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. It's a lot of fun, Ray.
It's tough to get an appraisal over the phone based on descriptions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you've done well once again. Support comes from Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, cocktails, live music every Friday, ChesterCommonTable.com. Michael's Appliance Center, Middletown, serving the Hudson Valley since 1945 with brands including Wolf, Sub-Zero, Cove, Gen Air, Fisher-Paykel, and more. Nobody knows appliances like Michael's. Michael'sAppliance.com. And Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com. for gift certificates and photo gallery. I tell you, Mark Lawson, it's...
International Society of Appraisals. I just remembered it.
ISA,
International Society of Appraisers. I just remembered it. I didn't look it up.
All right, bonus points for you. I was just going to say, it's usually pretty warm in here. It's about Antarctic in here right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to turn the heat up. Thanks to everybody for listening and for calling. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Dina Salzman. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we take the temperature of the real estate market at 2 o'clock. Right now, stand by for the book show.